So it's a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because you're thinking, why would something that consumes a lot of electricity possibly be any good for electricity? I mean, you have to think, if you were a business owner and you had a bakery, imagine having a client that comes at the end of the day and just buys everything you didn't sell. I mean, that would be pretty incredible.
Welcome back to Season 2 of Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today, I'm talking with Alana Mediavilla, the filmmaker behind Dirty Coin, a project that dives headfirst into the world of Bitcoin mining, not just the headlines of the hype, but the actual human beings behind the rigs, the politics behind the power grids, and what it means to build something real in a system built on belief. We get into what pulled her into this world, what surprised her along the way, and why she thinks crypto deserves a more honest conversation. So whether you're deep in the space or still trying to figure out what a node is, this one's got something for everyone. You can watch the full documentary at dirtycoinfilm.com and follow Alana's work at alanamedia.com or on Instagram at alanamedia. And of course, check out bostonblockchainweek.com to grab your pass and get in on the panels, art, meetups, and late night crypto weirdness happening this September. Let's jump into Bitcoin mining with Alana. How are you doing today, Alana? It's Alana, correct? With the silent
yes.
H?
Yes.
I did see the
I'm
credits.
I'm doing great. thank you. That's right. You saw it. That's like proof that people saw it all the way
I know, right?
The end.
Yeah. I had a feeling that might have been why you put that in there.
Have a couple of Easter eggs.
Right.
But yes, Alana. And I've had a great day. It was a bummer that we could have made earlier work, but this is perfect.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm glad we got you in your studio. I love the background behind you there. Is that a neon Mona Lisa?
Yes, it is. I needed like a backlight and
because
I have a backlight, but it got screwed and I've bought it now like 4 times and I'm like, maybe I need something different. And so this was cool. And yes, I was with my kids when I bought it. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever, it'll be fine.
Right.
And I was mostly looking at the like, okay, I'll get some color behind me. And get a good little hair light.
Okay, so you've always had a bit of an eye for what makes for a good camera shot.
Absolutely, yes. I was a director of photography for a decade, so that was my job to make sure. Well, of course, I would work with the gaffer, but very often we didn't really have that kind of budget, so I was very often my own gaffer.
Okay, so before we get too far ahead of ourselves then, we're talking about Dirty Coin, or at least that's what you're here to talk to me about, is your Bitcoin documentary that's not just the energy question around Bitcoin and the cleanliness of that, quote-unquote, but even like a little bit of the ethics, I think, you touched on too, which I wasn't expecting to be up late at night thinking about the ethics of Bitcoin and whether or not people have a right to know what I'm purchasing, and I'm still not sure where I land on that, but I think it's very interesting that you're able to spark that kind of internal dialogue, especially when I went into it expecting to think about different things.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, with Bitcoin, nobody can decide if you can make that purchase or not, but actually everybody can see it happening.
Right.
So it's not a good privacy coin. So when it comes to deciding if everybody should know what you're buying, if you don't think that people should know what you're buying, then maybe you shouldn't be using
Bitcoin. Maybe a digital ledger is not the way to do it.
yes. So it's more like if you want to be able to have money that you don't need to ask for permission to move it, that you don't need to ask for permission to use it, that it has its own, some people think it's a store of value and it's just going to go up in price, but you know it's also a medium of exchange, so it doesn't matter where you sit, you know you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're just sitting on it, you're using it for gains.
Right.
But you can use it regardless of what anybody thinks of Bitcoin. You can still use it without having to ask for permission. Now, if you're using it, especially on layer one, it's going to broadcast to absolutely everyone, which is why Bitcoin works, but also not great for privacy.
Right. Well, I mean, okay, so let's talk about maybe some of the other controversies that get addressed in this. And one of them being one that I believed up until very recently was that the Bitcoin is energy intensive and it uses a lot of dirty power. The film challenged that assumption immediately and presented some amazing arguments. My favorite one was just like the way how in Finland, instead of using heaters, now we're just going to set up mining rigs because they generate heat as a waste product. So why not, make the heaters make a little bit of money, right?
Yes.
So, That one I thought was very interesting. But then there's also the, you presented like the good side of what this can do, where Bitcoin can be used as like a minimum purchaser of electricity in underdeveloped areas, places in Africa, Southeast Asia, and other places that don't have very good energy grids yet brought out to like some of the areas of the country. This is a way to kind of allow them to bring the generators out there, right? While you're waiting for the infrastructure to build up, you have something that can sell, that you can sell some of this excess energy to.
Right, you're bringing the demand. So and you're allowing people that are the ones bringing the generators up, because very often, especially in Africa, it's local people that are setting up their power generation, but they don't have a load yet. In some places, of course, Africa is a very large continent, it's very tricky when we talk about Africa, because it's, you know, it's different in different places. But in Malawi, for example, I mean, they have the generators and they have the capacity, right? They have the energy, but not necessarily the load, because this is an area that doesn't have refrigerators in their house. They've never had electricity before. So there isn't a load, there isn't a demand for that. So it's that, offer and demand situation where you're bringing the offer before there's any demand. You need to create that demand, but like you need to wait for people to get refrigerators. You need to wait for people to get TVs, you know, you need to wait for, and they need to make the money to get those things. So it's not a night to day, like, oh, there's electricity now, everybody's, you know, has electricity. Like, it's not that easy. And so to be able to have something that is at least monetizing that electricity while it's available, while the residents pick it up. And this is something that very often when people say that it's misinformation to say that Bitcoin brings energy, it's, I understand what they're saying, because they're bringing the demand. But if it weren't for the demand, then those that make the supply would not have an incentive to make that supply. So it's a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because you're thinking, why would something that consumes a lot of electricity possibly be any good for electricity? And I mean, you have to think, if you were a business owner and you had a bakery, imagine having a client that comes at the end of the day and just buys everything you didn't sell. I mean, that would be pretty incredible.
I think where the hangup is, or at least mine, like I was trying to think of like if there could be any ethical dilemmas that maybe arise from a situation where you have Bitcoin miners and locals competing for electrical supply. The only situation I could see is maybe if the miners are willing to pay more for electricity than the locals are, and they end up crowding them out. But I don't know that I don't know that Bitcoin works that way. I don't think that you can bid that much for energy and be able to make a profit still. Right?
You know, like, what are the margins on this?
You
want the cheapest electricity that you can make.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to say that that can't happen, because who knows, right? Right? A Bitcoin miner is anybody that can connect a Bitcoin mining machine to the network and can pay for the electricity. I mean, anybody can do this. Mm-hmm. Anybody can go on eBay right now and buy a machine. Anybody can get involved. And you're going to get some people that are not good business people that are going to get involved. They're going to, you know, tell all their friends and family, give me X amount of money, I'm going to make us rich mining Bitcoin. And they're not going to know where to turn on. And they're going to waste everybody's money. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that this can go wrong. I will say that when it comes to the people that I interviewed, I mean, there are, when it comes to a lot of people that work in Bitcoin in general, there are easier technologies and easier ways to make money. Right now, if you're raising money for an AI data center, you're going to have a way easier time than for a Bitcoin mining company.
But the
people that tend to mine Bitcoin, they tend to believe that it's important, and they see the value of Bitcoin going up because they understand Bitcoin, and they see the value, and they only see that value going up over time. And they're willing to take that risk. And I have met some really, some people that are very, very high ethics people that are really doing this because they believe that this is the best for the planet. But there's also people, you know, that you see in every bull market, that they just get in and they're not necessarily the idealists. They're more the opportunists that see that there's an opportunity going on. And I think that as the price of Bitcoin continues to go up and difficulty rate continues to go up and more publicly traded companies continue to mine Bitcoin, we are going to continue to see the mining industry change over time. And I don't think, and I would be more than willing to do a part two in like 8 years
right.
when it changes. Because I do think it's going to change, just like it has changed from the past. It's not people mining off their desktop computers anymore. We're looking at privately traded companies consuming a gigawatt in one location, which is more than a whole city's worth of consumption of electricity. I don't think even Satoshi expected that to happen.
I mean, doesn't that kind of like self-limit itself? Like as more people try to mine, then the rewards become less. So you kind of prevent it from ever becoming too saturated because of that, right?
Yes, yes. And but it also changes. So if you might be on the top in this cycle, and then you might be too big to be sustainable in the next cycle, and then you need to become smaller because it's just not profitable anymore.
Right.
So I think that we are going to start seeing a lot more home miners, which we're already seeing. So there's the trend moving in that direction. There's a lot of people that are lotto mining, which is like solo mining. And
just hoping to hit one coin.
Yeah, just hoping to hit one block, which is three coins and transaction fee. So, you know, and it's a lotto that you are eligible for every 10 minutes. So, you know.
Okay. Like those odds a lot better, actually.
Yeah, exactly. You buy the hardware once and then you continue to pay for the electricity. So we're starting to see that more and more. Is that a sustainable model? No, there are easier ways to make Bitcoin. I mean, even if you're just on Nostr. But I think it's interesting, and people are making Bitcoin, and it's, you know, especially if you have cheap electricity, there's really no reason. I mean, I guess it depends on where you stand, but it's low risk, high reward.
So we talked a lot about the impacts in like Africa and developing nations, but I mean, you also pointed to a huge amount of unused energy here in the U.S. that I never really thought about, but the on-demand load, the amount of load that's just sitting there waiting for you to flip the switch on, because you got to have the capacity to absorb all these starting loads. For the suppliers to be able to sell that, and Bitcoin mining is a load that you can have on until you need it and then just switch it right off, right? That doesn't hurt anything to turn off the process.
Within seconds.
That is huge that should lead to lower prices for consumers. Like this should make the industry more competitive. Like this should have a lot of follow-on benefits for us.
I didn't cut in more quotes of the case studies of literally how much the megawatts went down, like in terms of the cost for residents, only because I knew that it would date the movie and I didn't want to date it too much.
Right.
And I felt like, you know, it could be something that could be easily like picked apart. Like, oh, you set 7 cents per kilowatt and it's now 12 or whatever.
Right,
and
right.
I just didn't want to get locked into any. But within the case studies and the interviews, we definitely already saw a reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that here in Puerto Rico. And it's interesting because it's not like a reduction of all time. It's just that we are already higher than we used to be, especially depending on if you are on a grid that had a large industrial load. Like here I live in Puerto Rico, we pay some of the highest electricity in the United States, which is 20-something, sometimes 30-something cents per kilowatt hour. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that is because we built a grid for an industrial load. We had a lot of factories and a lot of pharmaceutical companies here, and Monsanto developed a lot of their products here. And when they left to cheaper labor in other countries, the grid, all of that industrial load was not replaced by another buyer that's going to spend $1 million on electricity every month. And so suddenly that load goes to the residents. And so that happens not just in Puerto Rico, but in a lot of different places that they have the grid for a different time. And so residents have ultimately that cost falls down to the only people that are consuming, the only customers of that electricity. And what that means is then our cost is higher than ever before. So being able to have something that consumes that waste, and our consumption is higher too. Like we come home and suddenly it's three air conditioners going on, you know, plug in the car, it's this huge peak of consumption of everybody coming home. And now it's all electric stoves and their air fryer and all of the stuff that suddenly consumes electricity where we were on gas before, we were on different things before. It's a give and take, right? Now we're also on LEDs and that consumes less than other things. So, you know, our consumption overall is going up. And those peaks and valleys, which they call the duck curve in energy, basically are the times of higher consumption, the times of lower consumption. And it kind of resembles a duck, like the head of the duck, the body, and then the tail. now the duck curve is looking more like peaks and valleys, because when we are consuming electricity, we're consuming so much more of it. And then when we're home, we're consuming so much less. So the grid needs to be ready for three ACs, two electric vehicles, you know, like everything going on at the same time at night, which is way more consumption than before. But now during the day, you don't have those things on. So now you have even more waste. But in order to match the demand for when you need it, you need to have it. So yeah, you have places like ERCOT, you have other utilities that have been experimenting with Bitcoin now for a few years. And now they're talking a lot more about it. At the beginning, a couple of years ago, when I was interviewing, they were like, we have a few pilots, but we got to give this a few years before we really know. Right. And I think that was really fair. You can't just plug it in and have one good month and call it a success, you know?
We can.
It's a long-term thing.
Before we get too far away from the next question I wanted to ask you, which was how you got involved in Boston blockchain then. Like, I see that you've been making like the rounds with all the film festivals. Like, is this your first time doing the Boston Blockchain event? How did you hear about it? How did you get involved? What's your topic? Are you guys going to be screening the movie? What are you doing while you're visiting Boston?
I am excited to meet the crypto community that is currently building in Boston, because I know that Boston has always been the epicenter for a lot of new ideas, music, art. So I'm definitely excited to see what kind of tech scene is in Boston, because my tech scene background is all Silicon Valley. Mm. Whenever I go to tech scenes in like Berlin or Zurich, you know, they all have their flavor, and I'm excited to taste Boston's flavor.
So it's your first time in Boston. Scene. Okay.
It's my first. I mean, I went one time just to with an ex-boyfriend to check out a college a long time ago. But that's the only time I've been to Boston. And, you know, I'm excited to go again just because it's a place that has normally just attracted so many smart minds, and so many cool things have come out of Boston. And then again, I feel like every tech scene, like you go to Atlanta tech scene and it feels like an Atlanta tech scene, you know, you go to Texas and it feels like a Texas tech scene. So I've never been to the Boston tech scene, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
I actually want to grab you after the event is over and just kind of get your opinion on how that went, or how that compares to the other scenes that you've been to.
I would love to come let you know. Yeah, because everybody has like their own special DNA. Even San Francisco feels different than Palo Alto. Like it's every neighborhood, every space, even down to the place where you meet up, you know, or how fancy it is, and all these different things really are conducive to the type of conversation that you're going to have. It creates a space where certain things can grow in that particular space.
Oh, I love it. Are you guys going to be doing a screening in Boston?
I believe we are going to be doing a screening. And then I'm also going to be talking about, you know, working on the film, why I decided to work on it. And I'm working on a keynote. I've been delivering a keynote now for a couple of years on, you know, electricity. Why do we need it? How does it work? Why does demand have anything to do with the success of production? All these different things. And I believe that when I understood certain basic elements, I was able to kind of understand the macro a little bit better, and not always in the sense that it aligned with, oh, this immediate automatically means Bitcoin's good. It's more, now I understand this, so I can see how Bitcoin doesn't work in this situation, or I can see how it does work in this situation.
Gives you more context.
Exactly. It's just you kind of understand it a little bit better. And it's not just Bitcoin. And the reality is that the data center footprint, the footprint that computers have in our world, in our physical world, is only going to grow.
Yeah.
So data centers, whether they're mining Bitcoin or housing or creating AI images for your memes or for whatever the heck you're doing, even that simple, it's going to require a physical footprint. And our relationship with that should not be one made out of fear. It should be one made out of knowledge. And I believe that this can be used against us if we don't understand. I think that the idea, and I've already spoken with folks that want to, you know, register every computer, what every computer is doing, and deciding who gets to, and this is a growing movement. And for me, this is something like, well, who gets to decide?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And that's a problem. And that central single point of failure has always been a problem in tech. And I've, you know, been a cypherpunk for a while, before I knew that that's, you know, was a thing. And for me, I think that an open and neutral internet is extremely important.
Yes, yes. Speaking of open and neutral net, did net neutrality get, is that the thing again? Or did that end up, has that still been walked back?
I think it's been completely walked back. And yeah, here I have a cypherpunk. I'm telling you, I'm in. And I'm more in just because of the individual liberty. You know, like we wouldn't have to be so particular about any particular group, about defending a particular group, if every single person's individual freedom were just just something that we could take for granted.
I thought that's what, you know, the rules of the law in this country did, but you know, I mean,
that hasn't been the case. There really hasn't. Yes.
So you mentioned, or we talked about the screenings, and I think I briefly dropped the cons on there, the film festival.
Con?
Okay. What was it like going to that? Was that your first time there?
It was my first time at Con, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. France is an interesting place because Bitcoin is definitely a dirty word in France for the most part. But then you have a lot of people that work in Bitcoin and in energy and that are like really deep into the space also in France. And so you have this duality in the country. Same with like the Netherlands too. You get this super hot and super cold at the same time. Right. In the US, in most places, it's like, Bitcoin, whatever, you know, there's no emotion.
Yeah, you have people that are like for it, but nobody's like anti it. Like nobody really hates it.
Yeah, I mean, again, depends on where you are. Yeah. There's some places in San Francisco and I'm like, oh my God, did I just insult your mom? Like, I'm so sorry. It gets bad.
Wow.
So there are some places where, yes, Bitcoin is a dirty word, but for the most part in the United States, you know, at best you just get disinterest. It's not really like that big of a deal, you know. But in other places, as soon as you utter the B word, it's like, no, that's terrible. It's so bad for the environment. And then you just hear the exact same thing from every single person. Which for me, it's always an indicator that propaganda is at play.
Yes.
Because
yes.
when you have people that, as soon as they hear a trigger word, you hear like a particular script that comes. It's like, obviously that's propaganda because normally people don't react that way. Like if I were to say bread, every single person's not gonna be like, oh yes, because bread is delicious and I put butter in it. Oh, bread. Oh, because bread is delicious and I put butter in it. Like as soon as you hear that four or five times, there's some bread propaganda going on. Because normally people don't actually all react the same way about things. So, you know, with Bitcoin, there's definitely some propaganda at work.
The person who was basically the one who wrote the paper that is referenced for all the propaganda for the energy issues around Bitcoin, what was his name? Mr. DeVry something DeVry?
Alex DeVry.
Alex DeVry. Mm-hmm. You actually had him on the documentary, and I'm curious how much of that footage did you guys use with them? How forthcoming was he with like talking to you guys? Was he upset with the way his data was used? Did he offer any explanations for why he did what he did? Or did he just kind of think that people are talking about it now, so I did my job? Because that was kind of the impression I got from watching the interview.
Yeah, I mean, and solid, you know. I would say, yes, he was forthcoming. I did show him all of his clips before putting them in the film, before we premiered the film. He approved those clips. So he knows how he was portrayed, like he knows what's in it. And he also knew that I was investigating it from the viewpoint of, you know, I am a Bitcoin user. So I am actually, you know, using Bitcoin and I see how the technology works. I understand it, you know,
right.
I don't use it every day. I'm not a Bitcoin millionaire or anything like that, but I understand the technology. And so it's not a hit piece. It was just, is this technology more good than bad? It is a technology and it does work. And it has been working from day one. Every 10 minutes, more or less, there has been a block mined since 2009. I mean, there has been no network that has had that kind of reliability. So
actually, yeah, that's a great point. I never even thought of that.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So there's that. I mean, you don't have to believe in Bitcoin. That is the case whether you believe in Bitcoin or not. Now, you don't have to use it. You don't have to have it, et cetera. You might not think it's as good as gold. You can have opinions. But the network itself, you know, as the network itself. But anyway, Alex was, you know, I understand Alex because I came from the same place from, is this actually bad for the environment? He also came from that place, and he believed, especially coming from the Netherlands, I think it's important to put into context that in the Netherlands, as soon as you land, I've been there twice, and they have polar bears on tiny little icebergs drowning right as you get to the airport. It's like global warming is going to kill us all, you know, and it is something that is like really, like it's in billboards, it's all over the place. So they're very scared of the world, basically. You know, the sea level's rising, and I don't know if maybe they've seen their canals higher than ever or what's going on, but it is crazy the amount of information that is kind of towards a particular, like, carbon is destroying the planet. We're responsible for this. Feel guilty. Give us control. Give us let us guide us to salvation. And so I do think that having that in context is important because, you know, it's like saying, well, a Texan is talking about meat or oil. I mean, I think it's important to understand where people are coming from.
Yeah. When you talk about his life experiences or basically the environment he grew up in, like when you explain like those pressures that are shaping the narrative of the way he sees Bitcoin, it makes a lot more sense why he would have the concerns that he would have.
Yeah, I mean, that's the science that he's basing it on. That's the concerns that he has. And ultimately, I think that those are good concerns. Is it actually bad?
Was his science good, though?
Well, so it wasn't.
That's the question.
His science wasn't. But you can't, but that's the thing about science. You have a lot, you know, you do something, it gets people to talk about it, it gets more scientists involved, and you get more experiments. And in a way, he did that. He was able to bring a awareness to mining, and he was able to get a lot more people involved. And, you know, there were a lot of people that just to prove him right or to prove him wrong, I mean, they dove into the subject. So in a way, he gave like so much power and purpose to the cause of finding out if he was right. No, because you guys are saying he's wrong. I'm going to double down that he's right. It's like, oh, oops, he's not right. You know, and that's,
you know, that's actually good for him because even if he's wrong, then that's that good. Like you can't be upset about that. Like, oh, good. Bitcoin's not going to kill the environment. Thank God.
I wouldn't. I mean, he's still a young man. Yeah. So to say that in your 20s, I mean, we all say a bunch of weird stuff. It's just that now, you know,
it's all recorded.
Exactly. Everything is recorded. But ultimately, he's not a bad guy. And he sat down with us and we did talk for 2 hours. And I only ended up with like a minute and a half of footage of this.
Oh, man. You might have to do a director's cut of. Maybe release some podcast cuts or something, huh?
But he definitely, you know, he's not a big Bitcoin fan. He sees that the world can be handled a different way. But I still very much respect, and I really enjoyed my conversation with him because, you know, you speak in a bubble for a long time, and it just sounds like everybody's just going like, me too, hi, me, and it's like, nobody likes that.
So easy to stay inside that bubble too, and that safety, and not ever venture outside of it. So I mean, yeah, hats off to the guy for coming on to it.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's on the other side of the thing that he's fighting against or for. Takes a lot of courage to come out there and put that on display.
It does. Yeah. So I respect him for that. And he was also just very honest and forthcoming with me. And so I would say that every single person that I interviewed, I learned from, including Alex.
Yeah.
Including Alex.
Yep. And I think that shows in the documentary, at least from my experience watching it. I felt like I was learning every step of the way. I think you did a phenomenal job with it.
Thank you.
It is called Dirty Coin, and I believe people can go to dirtycointhemovie.com if they want to check it out, or you can even set up screeners, it looks like.
Yes, you can set up screeners. We are going to be for rent. We're for rent already for fiat, so you can pay in dollars. and or euro. And we're going to be available for rent in Bitcoin as well, for those that think Bitcoin is a medium of exchange. And then we'll have more and more ways. You know, what one thing that with the film is that people ask me, like, is it pro or against Bitcoin? But when you are in Bitcoin and you understand the energy argument and you look at the people that are in the film, there's a lot of, like, even if they're pro Bitcoin, they don't agree on a lot of things when right. it comes to energy themselves within the film. So it isn't just like, is it pro or is it negative? It's when it comes to a movie about energy, a documentary about energy, I mean, what is right and what is wrong has been the science in both of those areas has been so occluded by special interests that have, you know, and their propaganda and marketing and whatever. Yeah. And that's fine. It's whoever's the loudest usually, you know, sticks right. in people's brains. Unfortunately. And so even just the energy argument, we have a lot of different people that have different perspectives in the film as well in terms of what is dirty, what is not. And ultimately, I hope that this opens up a bigger conversation. And it shouldn't be something that's co-opted politically. I know that politically it has been, and it really shouldn't be, because engineering and science should not be something political. It should just be something fact-based
right.
and empirical. And so I'm trying to bring that level of communication and people together that are on either side of the, you know, climate crisis spectrum yeah. to come together, because I think ultimately we all just want to live a good life and we want to breathe clean air. And ultimately we have more things in common than what divides us. Right. And so being able to bring all of those people together ultimately is just going to mean that we're going to have more meaningful conversations outside of the echo chamber. And yeah, so I really want people to watch Dirty Coin, because again, this is a technology that if somebody were to learn everything that I put into Dirty Coin in 69 minutes on their own, it would take them honestly months. It would take them probably years.
Yeah, I was gonna say months is generous.
Yeah, it'll take them a really long time. And this is like a crash course into this. And then people
three after different that continents point, at least too that you four, travel
yeah, four okay. continents. Yeah. And then after that, they can, you know, continue building that knowledge. But like I said, if it's not Bitcoin, it's going to be AWS. It's going mm-hmm. to be your 8K Netflix movies. It's going to be your Instagram stories that are stored forever. You know, it's all of that. It's going to be one of those things. And so it's important for us, especially if we believe in a free and open and neutral internet, then we also need to believe in free and open and neutral data centers.
I don't know if you're going to win that battle, but
I know. We'll try.
Maybe save that for the next documentary.
Yes.
Alana, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing you at Boston Blockchain.
Same.
We'll grab you before the event ends, because I do want to get your opinion on the Boston scene, because I've been talking it up to Ian. Curious if we have the same opinion. If not, then I'm just okay. going to completely cut all this and no one will ever hear another word of it.
Sounds like a good director right, right there.
Huge thanks to Alana for joining us today and bringing so much nuance and humanity to a space that's usually all noise. You can stream Dirty Coin right now at dirtycoinfilm.com. You can keep up with their latest work at alanamedia.com or at alanamedia on Instagram. And if you're heading to Boston in September, don't sleep on bostonblockchainweek.com. One ticket gets you into everything. The talks, the art, the networks, the vibe. Follow the show, share it with someone who loves a good story, and we'll catch you all in the next episode. Produced by China Shop Productions.